Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. On today's podcast, I'm going to speak with a winemaker named Chris Carpenter. He's the winemaker under Jackson Family Wines for some of the most prestigious brands in their portfolio. Chris is leading the transition to certified organic farming across all of their 480 planted acres of 15 estate vineyards. This is a huge, huge undertaking and a massive achievement. Jackson Family is pulling off an amazing feat in California by turning all of their vineyards, and some of these are very, very high-level, expensive, very wonderfully reviewed wines. How do you turn all of that into sustainable, regenerative, and organic? And what does that actually mean for the wine, for the consumer? And what does it mean to the taste of the wine in the glass? This is a fascinating conversation with a guy who does a lot of work up there. Before I do that, I want to remind everybody, go to SOMTV.com. You can watch our new SOM film. You can also watch hundreds of hours of the best culinary content, educational entertainment that exists anywhere else. And it's available on all apps worldwide, on your smart TV, on your phone, on your tablet. Go to SOMTV.com and enjoy that now. Without further ado, my conversation with Chris Carpenter of Jackson Family Wines. Chris, it's an honor to have you on the SOM TV podcast. It means a lot. I know you are an insanely busy guy, so welcome.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, why don't you tell everybody kind of what your position is and what you do or have chosen to do for a living?
Well, I am the winemaker for a number of wines under Jackson Family Wines oversight. I make Cardinal, La Coya, Mount Brave, Caledon, La Jota, and Hickenbotham in Australia. I'm also the general manager of the vineyards that we farm in Napa Valley, which is about 450 acres. And my job is to bring the raw product up to the highest level that I can by being very intimate in the farming decisions, and then bring that into the winery and morph it into wine and then present it to our collectors and our retail and restaurant partners.
It sounds like there's got to be like four or five of you. I mean, I don't know how that's possible that what you just listed is one person. I mean, I know you have teams and I know that it's, but that is a lot. I have visited most of those outside of the Australian winery. I have been to all of those properties and they are not small.
You nailed it though. It is about the people around me. I have an incredible team that supports me and hopefully that I support. And together we do a lot of this work in tandem and try to create. There's a certain expectation that I have for the kind of quality that we're driving at and the kind of work that we do. And the people that I surround myself with are all on board with that. And together we do a lot of great things to accomplish those goals.
Well, and just a quick thing before we get into what we're going to talk about, which is a monumental task that you and your company and a lot of your team did in transitioning a huge portion of vineyards, I mean, to organic. And I want to talk to you about what that means, why you did it, what the challenges were, a lot of that stuff. But first, I want to say, so Cardinal, I mean, these are some very premium wineries up in Napa. It's a lot of pressure on maintaining quality. We filmed, I don't know if you ever saw the first film that we made, Sam, but we filmed the very beginning of it. We were staying at Cardinal. And so kind of it was a big introduction to me in the fine wine space in Napa because that was early in my career. And I wonder that the idea of turning all of this stuff to organic, you have a lot of levels of quality and price points and things like that. It's got to be a scary proposition.
It was. I was, to be frank, that was in the back of my mind as we were moving forward with the idea of transitioning these vineyards. So a little bit of my background. For many years, I was involved in an organization called Slow Food. And Slow Food was one of the very first food systems organization that was trying to alert the general populace to what was going on with food production globally and how different food systems, different ways of thinking about food as culture and about the realities of our changing planet were all tied together. So having experienced a number of different farming systems around the world and seeing how those farming systems were beneficial to the geography that they were being practiced in, but then ultimately to the products and the quality of the products gave me a lot of confidence that if I did this in grape farming, that I could not only do right by the planet, but do right by my collectors and the people that are ultimately enjoying the wines that I'm producing. Having said that, it was still nerve-wracking moving forward because I was doing it somewhat on an island and taking the reins of these vineyards and shifting them to something that our company hadn't ever done. We've been working on a lot of different farming models towards this end. But when you have a company the size of ours, to try to do that globally is really hard. Isolating it to Napa helped to move this needle forward, at least in my small geography, in a way that benefits the entire company and gives the rest of the company a model and confidence, right? Because if I can do it in Napa, you should be able to do it in the Sonoma Coast, in Monterey, in Oregon, where we have vineyards around the world. So that was important to me. And you asked the reason why I do it. Agriculture, we as a industry worldwide, we're pumping in about 20 to 30% of the carbon and the gases into the atmosphere of all of the different outputs that humanity is involved in. Agriculture is at that level, 30%. That's a really significant number. Agriculture should be leading the way in changing that number and changing how we think about it. And on several different levels, you know, there's the level that we should be leading it because we're one of the bigger contributors to it. But also, if we don't lead it, then the ability to grow food, to grow pleasure products like wine, to survive as a species is intimately impacted. So that drives a lot of how I think about, you know, or making those type of decisions is based on that. Just to frame this a little bit, and I know I might be babbling, but I get on a soapbox about this because
this is good.
It's really important. We talk about, you know, everybody was talking about Taylor Swift over the Super Bowl, right? the Travis Kelce thing aside, everybody was moaning about her flying on her jet from one place to another to see her boyfriend play football. And there's probably some validity to that. But airlines contribute only 3.5%, airlines and jet travel in general, 3.5% of the gases that are being pumped into the atmosphere from humanity are coming from that kind of travel. That's still significant, but not as significant as 30%. We should be leading that. And as one of the most visible industries in agriculture, the wine industry should be leading it in regards to visibility and getting the word out. And so a lot of those things have been on my mind for a lot of years, and making that jump to switch over our vineyards to fully organic with the regenerative side of it on the near horizon for us has been something that I'm proud of the people that have been involved in it. And in the end, what's been great is, yeah, we've reduced a little bit of our crop. We have. I mean, when you go organic, you're losing some volume. But the quality is off the charts, you know, as compared to what it was. And that's a good thing. That gives me a lot of fodder for when I'm talking about volume reductions with the finance guys. I can say, well, look, the quality's up. We can raise the price because of the quality, and we're good.
Let's take it back a step. Let's start with how big is Jackson Family? And I'm not asking this in the pejorative, like how big in size. I mean, how big as a challenge? And to follow that up, why? I know you're talking about the importance of the environment and all this stuff, and that is very important. But I guess maybe instead of why, what was the catalyst? What was the thing that made you and your team say, okay, we're going to management, we're going to ownership, we are going to implement this regardless of how hard it is?
Yeah,
that's
a loaded question because there's so many different facets to that. The why was what I just said. I'm a firm believer that we should be leading this as vineyard managers in the agricultural industry. And I work for a family that wants to be around for the next 500 years. They want a book written about them, much like the Antonoris wrote a book 20 years ago about their family and the history of that wine-growing family in Italy. The Jacksons want to be around.
Going back hundreds and hundreds of years, for sure.
Yeah. Well, they've got a multi-generational vision as to how that's going to be accomplished. And part of that vision won't be accomplished if the land that they're growing their grapes on isn't able to be in communion with that vision. These incredible vineyards that Jess Jackson originally sought out and now Barbara Behnke and her children are continuing to seek out are not going to be able to sustain a family if we're not taking care of them, if we're not truly shepherding them and being stewards of that land rather than extracting from the land in our own species crazy way of extracting things. If you're not taking care and thinking about how these properties will continue to perform over the next 10 years, 50 years, 100 years, then you're not doing right by, again, the planet. You're not doing right by this family that's supporting us and allowing me to make these great wines and allowing the you know, winemaking is a blast. Right? I mean, talking to your sound engineer, John, he was making wine in Los Angeles in his apartment because he was getting into it because of what you turned him on to being involved in SOM TV. It's a fun thing to do. You bring things from the earth, you bring them into your home or into your winery, you create this product that opens doors to conversation and memories and enjoyable nights and all the other things that wine does. But there's a responsibility that comes with that as well. And a family like the Jacksons understand that. And they want to be around for a while. And I'm here to help them do that. And I'm doing it, to be frank, selfishly, because I'm not going to be benefiting from their largesse 500 years from now. But I hope that the planet will be, because I've set up at least a portion of it to be a model for how people should be thinking about our connection to the earth.
To me, I think, whose idea was this to say, we are going to start transitioning to organic? I really want this. It's passionate. When you went to people, were they like, we're thinking the same thing?
Yeah.
Or did they come to you? I mean, how did this transpose? I want people listening to understand the scope at which this has been done. I know it was done in some steps, but it's still, the reason we're talking is this is one of the largest organic projects probably in the world, right?
I can't say in the world, but I can say right now in Napa Valley, we have the largest acreage that's farmed by one organization. That is us. That could change. I hope it does. It's great to be in this position right now where we are the larger organic grower in Napa Valley. But again, I did it as much for this property here as I did it for my home that is Napa Valley, and to show people, you know, you can do this. And I diverge from your question. I will get back to it. But you can, do it in a way that not only does your quality go up, but we're saving money. You know, the way we are farming and how we've weaved in some of the farming challenges with some of the ways we approach it, we've actually reduced some of our costs in the long run. And that's that again.
Well, wait, I want to jump in there because you said that your yields go down when you do this. So first, tell me why the yields, and then I want to ask you how you can save money when your yields are going down. So first, let's go, why when you transition to organic, do the yields of the plants go down? What's the reasoning?
You and I were having a moment about Rambo earlier.
Before we were recording, we were talking about Rambo.
The movie. And you said, what happened to John Rambo between Rambo 1 and Rambo 2? Well, what happened was Sly Stallone discovered steroids and he pumped up big time and his body became this just massive and he didn't look like he did in the original film. But he was probably also doing things to his body that are just not good to his body, putting strain on his liver, his kidneys, his skin, all kinds of things along that age. Pretty damn, he looked good, man. He was huge, right? Well, that's exactly the difference between farming organically and farming in a conventional manner. You're pumping in chemicals into the ground, onto the plants, in the atmosphere and environment that make these plants bigger, stronger, and create a model that will give you more fruit by way of that. They're just bigger, stronger plants and able to do that. But in the long run, those plants are going to peter out because they can't maintain that. Just like guys that are on steroids over a long period of time, they have a lot of problems later on in life. It's the exact same scenario. You can add things to biological systems that enhance those systems for short periods of time, but typically there's a negative outcome that happens somewhere down the line that there's a price to be paid for it. And that's...
You got to pay the tax
bill. Yeah.
Always.
And that's exactly what, you know, going from more conventional farming to organic farming is about. And I will give you a caveat to all of this in that we weren't farming conventionally at the time. We were farming sustainably. So we were, there's a series of rules that you can be sustainably accredited in California. We were on that same path. It's not as far as organic, and that kind of bothered me that we weren't going that next step. There's an end around on that path. Okay, so going back to your original question about, you know, what, how this happened. We've been talking in our company for a while about the idea of regenerative farming. We've done things in our wineries that have saved tremendous amounts of water. We're one of the first wineries in Napa to install solar. We are, and the family, again, that I work for is very keyed in on ways of reducing the inputs and outputs that this company has towards the planet. I had an opportunity to take on all of farming, to kind of break it away from the larger farming organization in Jackson Family. And I took that opportunity because I knew that that opportunity would afford me a couple of things. It would afford me control over the decisions to enhance the wine growing, which ultimately as a winemaker you want. Winemakers are nothing if they're not control freaks. And having the ability to affect change in the vineyard without having to go through the oftentimes painful exchange with vineyard managers is a good thing. And that was the initial reason for me pulling some of the farming operations away. But once I was able to pull the farming operations away, having then the next opportunity to really put our money where our mouth is and go organic was the next thing I was looking to do. I hired a gentleman named Rafael Jimenez to be my vineyard manager at that time. And Rafa was the vineyard manager that helped to establish the Fetzer organic program. And he came to work for me. And I'm like, Rafa, one of the reasons I'm hiring you is because we're going to move these vineyards to organic. And he was like, okay, let's do it. And we did it. And there's challenges with that. Again, the plants go through a couple of years of transition because they're used to getting all of those extra goodies in the soil and or baddies, and they weren't getting that anymore. So there's this almost like a lag phase that you have to deal with as the plants transition. But then typically the plants come zooming back. Not only were we tracking on the organic, we were also doing regenerative practices. So we stopped tillage. We brought in sheep. We're utilizing more IPM methods. IPM is integrated pest management, where you use other organisms to control pest organisms in your vineyards. Those biochar and compost, those kind of things we added, which actually helps us as we approach our ability to get accredited for regenerative, with the hope that we would be able to get these plants healthier and happier and more quality on the grapes. And it worked.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what were, so now you're saying you've saved money in doing this, or it's actually brought, like, how does A plus B equal C on that?
Yeah. So the products that we use, because we have to transition from, I mean, if I had a spreadsheet and we could go over the details, it'd be a lot easier. But we have
people, listeners of podcasts love spreadsheets. We should just read a spreadsheet right now. That would just get everybody
going.
As do I.
This is why I take on so many winemaking projects, so I don't have to sit in finance meetings and deal with spreadsheets.
You have no idea how much I agree. It's why I'm making 90 films at once, so I don't have to deal with the...
Yeah, me and you both.
It's really funny.
If you're not using the same product, if the plants draw a certain amount of their own resistance to different organisms, you reduce the amount of products that have to be placed on them. There's a way to manage the placement of the organic products onto the soils and onto the plants that you're utilizing less of those. We use, for example, we use foliar nutrient applications, which are basically you add, if you're short on one of the micronutrients in your soil, rather than adding it to the soil, we spray it over the canopy of the plant. It's a lot less expensive. It's a lot more effective, and the plants respond in a much more, again, organic way to it. We've done things like that. We've reduced the amount of labor that we've used in the vineyard by changing from an hourly structure to piecemeal. And piecemeal, the more that you do, the more you get paid. So what happens is our guys are in the field for a shorter amount of time. They get paid more. They get the job done quicker. Rafa is incredibly good at training them to maintain the quality. And our costs overall go down because there's not a lot of wasted time. And I think we're saving 20 to 30% on our labor costs because the guys are happier, we're happier, the plants are happier. It's win-win-win.
Very interesting. Well, so when you were able to get this going, what were the biggest challenges? I mean, you and I both know, as you said, winemaking is a blast. It's fun. But it's also, you know, your hands get dirty. It can be a pain in the ass. There's a lot of weather and challenges. What were the biggest challenges you faced in this process?
One of the first years that we did this, I think it was our first or second year of the transition, it was a really cold year. A lot of the strategy around cooler years, we were going no-till. I'm a firm believer that the microorganism biome in the soil and the connections between mycorrhizal fungi and plant roots is essential to plant health and communication. And you can't maintain that by tilling the soil. You break those things up. So it was a really cold year. This was a year before these rains were hitting us. One of the natural things to do is to break up the soil. You break up the soil, there's more heat to the soil. You're not using as much water. I refuse to do that. And that can cause problems. You may not get the crop load that you would hope for. You may not ripen when you want to. But I'm a firm believer that if you don't allow the plants to adjust to those extreme positions by themselves, if you give them a crutch every time, they're never going to respond in even more extreme situations. So that was a little bit of a difficult decision. One of the big, big challenges with going organic is weed control. The herbicide nature of farming, when you're using Roundup, or I shouldn't say Roundup, glyphosate on your vineyards. It's a great product for wiping out plant growth under your vineyards. And you, by doing that, you wipe out competition. When you don't use that, when you're not tilling, the plant growth in your vineyard is quite a challenge to overcome. You have to be in there quite often at certain times of the year to knock those plants back so that there isn't competition at the level that you want it at any one particular time of the year with the vines. So this is when we brought in the sheep. You bring in the sheep can keep the plants back up until bud break. They do so in a less impactful way on the soil compaction. They add their own sheep poop back into the soil, again, organic way. And then once they're done, then you have to go back in and figure out how you're going to deal with it from that point on. We do a combination of these implements that you can put under tractors that will mow, as well as do under vine cultivation, which is about an inch to 2 inch depth, which is nothing in that soil health profile, to knock these plants back. But you're in there a lot more often. And so you have to decide, okay, what's the best way to do this? If you put tractors in there at twice the number of times once the sheep are gone, well, then you're compacting the soil. If you bring in guys with weed whackers, well, you're not only spending the extra money on the additional labor, but you're, you know, those weed whackers are, they have their own little carbon output as well. So we're looking at technology right now. There's robotic technology that's electric, that the way these robots are designed, they have less compaction on the soil. They can go out as soon as the sheep are done and in conditions that are wet, which you can't put regular tractors or traditional tractors in those conditions. And it will be another level of management that we can achieve. We haven't yet implemented that, but the weeds are the big one that we have to constantly chase.
Just the thought of doing this on, you know, like 480 some acres isn't, I mean, to me, it's really staggering, and you definitely have your hands full. So all of this, the big question, I think, if I'm just a drinker or a collector or whatever, how does this actually affect my wine? The new farming, how does this affect the wine in my glass?
We talked a little bit about the volume. You're going to get less fruit. The plants are not growing with as much vegetative capacity, so they're not going to throw out as much reproductive capacity. So you're getting less fruit. Now, in the same vein, you've heard about deficit irrigation and how growers have used deficit irrigation for a long time to strain the plant, to test it, if you will. We've all heard this ubiquitous, everybody has said it at one time or another statement, vines like to struggle. Well, they do. They don't like to struggle, but they evolved struggling against trees. Their main competitor for resources were trees. So they had to figure out, or not figure out, but they had to evolve to strategies to get around these big bullies in the plant world, which are large trees with big root systems and big canopies. One of the ways they did that was they learned how to climb. They climbed to the top of the tree and then would spread out across the tree using tendrils to capture light. Their light usage capacity is about 80% more efficient than most trees. So they learned how to use light better. They learned how to use water better. Their ability to extract water versus a tree's ability to extract. A tree does it on volume. Vines do it on pressure and a better use of their transpiration rates, if you will. When you're creating systems that are naturally mimicking those systems that they evolved in, which were these trees versus vine systems, which in most cases we don't have in vineyards anymore, you're going to be creating better fruit. And you're creating better fruit because the other thing that all fruiting plants do is they have hormones that signal the plant when it's time to put energy into the reproductive portion. And the reproductive portion, if it's struggling, that tells the plant, oh my gosh, we're struggling, put more energy into the fruit, because we don't know as a plant if we're going to be around for the next few years, but we want our progeny to carry on the species, so put more energy in. This is why a lot of the success that I've had over the years has been in the mountains, because in mountain viticulture, a lot of that is true just by way of the conditions that we're growing in. You add that then on top of organic farming, it multiplies that effect, and you get this incredible, intense expression of whatever variety that you're growing, because you're straining those plants to capture that moment.
So from a just like layman term, the wine actually tastes better if you're making it struggle as well.
Yes. And
I mean, it's crazy. No, yeah. But it's good. I mean, what's amazing is, like, you know, look, this is what I love about the wine business. You're someone who can talk about Rambo First Blood and then turn and talk about hormones in grapevines. There are not many professions where people have to cross chemistry, you know, earth science, the history of geology, and all of these things just to speak about something we consume.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really an incredible, this is why I love this. This is why I love wine. You should be teaching if you weren't managing 647 vineyards right now.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's such a cool industry. My undergrad is in biology, so these kind of things I get off on, you know, and then ultimately, professionally, I was a bartender for 30 some odd years. So tying all these things together.
Join the club.
Yeah, it's one of my great, I can't be happier with what I do and how I do it. And I want that to be true for the next 20 generations. And if we're not paying attention now, we're doomed. We're on a downward slope. I don't care what anybody says. What you'll find is that farmers, more than anybody, even if you're the most right-wing farmer, a farmer will tell you that something's going on in the planet. It's not working anymore. And if we're not conscious of that, and we're not doing everything along helping to mitigate that and to reverse it, we're not being responsible not only to this planet, our species, and our families. You know, it's just...
I agree with you. It is when you speak to a farmer, you speak to somebody, especially depending on what part of the world they're in. You know, I mean, some regions are, you know, they're happy it's getting a little warmer. Yeah. They're happy that it's getting a little less or more wet. And others, it's a scary situation, very scary. And so you're absolutely right. Farmers have their finger on something, and it is pretty apolitical for them. It is just what is going on.
That's exactly right.
It sounds political to the outsider. I talk to winemakers in France all the time, Napa, all of these places, but there's something very special about a winery and a family and a group, as frankly, as large as yours is, leading the way in a place like Napa to help all the rest of the boats rise. And I know a lot of smaller wineries are leading that charge as well, but it's going to be the big guys that get noticed. And so it's really, really, you know, from where I stand behind a microphone, it's going to matter.
Well, and that's,
so keep at
that's
it.
The benefit of working for a family and not working for a corporation that's traded on the stock market right now. And ultimately, they'll come around because they'll have to, because it's going to cost them money. But the generation that is going to ascend to running this company right now, that's Chris and Julia and Katie Jackson, are very keyed in on this, and I'm happy to help them achieve their goals to create ranches and farms that are leading the way.
I have to tell you, it's such a pleasure to have you on, Chris. It means a lot, and I look forward to hearing more about what you guys are doing for the next 500 years, because I do plan on living that long.
So. You and me both.
All right, be safe up there and get back in the vineyards. I know you're busy.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for your time. Thanks for listening.
I want to thank everybody for listening to this episode, and I want to thank Chris Carpenter. That was a very, very fascinating conversation. It's always difficult for me to understand all the different terms when it comes to organic, sustainable, but to do it on this type of a scale is something else. That is no joke. I want to thank John Adams, our podcast producer. And I want to thank all of you, SomTV subscribers. You guys keep us going. And if you're not a SomTV subscriber, go to SomTV.com and watch hundreds and hundreds of hours of the best content you can find anywhere, including our new Som film, Cup of Salvation. All right, everybody, be safe and drink something nice for me.